Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Tomorrow marks 40 years since federal judge W. Arthur Garrity ruled that the Boston School Committee had deliberately created two school systems, one for whites, one for blacks. On June 21, 1974, Garrity ordered that students be bused to desegregate Boston schools. As we know, his decision ignited a firestorm of controversy and violence in Boston. On the eve of the anniversary, we have two reports this morning. Later, we hear from WBUR's Dolores Handy and the lead defendant in the case. First, WBUR's Bruce Gellerman looks back 40 years at Judge Garrity's court order and this note. This report includes offensive racial language.
It's no wonder we can still feel the effects of Judge Garrity's decision.
Busing was one of the biggest events in the entire history of the city of Boston.
Jim Vrabel, author of the soon-to-be-released book A People's History of the New Boston, puts busing right up there with the American Revolution. Though busing in Boston was more a civil war, the battlefield, the city, the fight between neighborhoods and neighbors.
It was so disruptive to the city at the time because it caused so much hard feeling among people and because it has had a lasting, I think, negative impact to this day.
It took Judge Wendell Arthur Garrity 15 months to decide the case. A third-generation Irish-American who lived in suburban Wellesley, Garrity was known as a meticulous, methodical man. His desegregation ruling in the lawsuit Morgan v. Hennigan ran 152 pages. Some facts are not in dispute. Boston schools were segregated. Some schools in Roxbury were 90% black. In South Boston, nearly 100% of the students were white. The Boston School Committee said that's just the way it was. It's where people chose to live. But black parents in the city wanted more for their kids.
This all started in the black community because although the schools were not providing a good education for anyone, they were providing a particularly bad one for the students in the black community.
Some white schools lack libraries and cafeterias. Some black schools lack classrooms, books, even teachers. In the mid-1960s, just one Boston school teacher in 200 was black. Among them was Gene McGuire.
My son went all the way through school till his senior year. He never saw a black man, not a custodian, not a teacher, not a counselor. Can you imagine your kids going all the way through school and never seeing a white teacher?
At the same time, there wasn't a single black principal in the entire Boston school system. Historian Jim Vrabel.
The reason Boston schools began to deteriorate was that the school system became less of an educational system and more a patronage system. Teachers and administrators were hired based on who they knew rather than what they knew.
In 1965, the Massachusetts legislature passed the Racial Imbalance Act, requiring schools with more than 50% of students of one race to desegregate. The Boston School Committee refused to comply. All five members elected at large were white.
It was clear to me when I was hired in 1972 that the day was going to come when chickens would come home to roost.
Bob Schwartz, now a professor emeritus of education at Harvard, was Boston Mayor Kevin White's advisor on education when the civil rights lawsuit was filed against the school committee.
At every point where the school committee had a choice, the school committee opted for segregation.
In 1965, more than a decade after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that separate but equal schools were unconstitutional, a black parent confronted Boston School Committee member Louise Day Hicks, a staunch opponent of school desegregation.
Any school that is predominantly Negro in Boston is an inadequate school.
But Mrs. Johnson, the superintendent of schools, has stated as his policy that a racially imbalanced school is not educationally harmful.
Well, Mrs. Hicks, Madam Chairman, may I say this? Superintendent Orenberger and yourself and other committee members do not have children in a racially imbalanced school, so you do not know what the effect is on our children.
People were tired of fighting and not winning.
Gene McGuire says black parents took matters into their own hands. They boycotted Boston schools and started separate freedom classes for their children. They began organizing buses and carpools to take inner-city black students to suburban white schools. And finally, black parents and the NAACP made a federal case out of it, suing the Boston School Committee using the state's Racial Imbalance Act.
And now you had a law that now had teeth to it, but you had to put in the structure that made those teeth bite.
On June 21st, 1974, Judge Garrity bit hard, declaring Boston School Committee had deliberately created two school systems, one black, one white. Garrity's remedy was busing. He ordered black and white students to attend schools in each other's neighborhoods. Ironically, says historian Jim Vrabel, the school committee had been using busing to segregate schools.
They actively created a segregated school system by using things like busing, like assigning students to schools outside of the neighborhood, like creating separate grade structures for schools in white neighborhoods and black neighborhoods, to artificially create and promote segregation where it might not have existed otherwise.
Garrity decided to begin busing that very year. He ordered black high school students from Roxbury be bused to South Boston, an all-white Irish enclave, and South Boston students bused to Roxbury. The reaction by some white parents was angry and swift.
Just because I'm white doesn't mean that the 14th Amendment doesn't refer to me either. I am white and I want my rights.
Just days before busing was to start, hundreds of white students and parents, with the support of the school committee, attended a rally in Government Center. They directed their rage at Senator Ted Kennedy, a backer of Garrity's busing plan, as he entered the Boston Federal Building.
Those people out there don't care to listen to you.
Okay.
Well, that's fine.
But this was just prelude to what would come 3 days later when school started. Parents jeered as school buses from Roxbury arrived at South Boston High. Black and white students entered through different doors guarded by police. Of 1,300 black students assigned to South Boston, only 100 showed up that day. In Roxbury, just 13 white students from South Boston went to school. Former mayoral education aide Bob Schwartz.
I was nominally the education person, but there wasn't much education to be had during that period of time. In the early years, it was basically just trying to keep kids from being killed.
Things got worse. State police and the National Guard were called in. A black student stabbed a white student at South Boston High. An angry mob hauled a black cab driver from his car and brutally beat him. Jean McGuire.
I remember riding the buses to protect the kids going up to South Boston High School, and the bricks through the window, signs hanging out those buildings, nigga go home, pictures of monkeys, the words, the spit. People just felt it was all right to attack children. And yet we prevailed.
In 1977, Jean McGuire became the first of two black candidates elected to the Boston School Committee. She's now executive director of METCO, an organization that provides voluntary busing for Boston black students to schools in the suburbs.
It isn't the bus you're talking about. You have to be really honest. It has nothing to do with transportation. Everybody in the suburbs rides a bus to school if they're not driving their cars. And it isn't the bus, it's us. It's who you live next to, who you think your kids are going to marry.
Are we better off for Garrity's decision?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Part of education isn't just this book stuff. It's how to get along as a city and look out for each other. You had to break the mold.
But breaking the mold would not help a broken school system. Critics say simply busing poor kids from one failed school to another could never create a more equal and integrated school system. Amid the chaos, some 30,000 students, mostly white, left Boston public schools for parochial in private schools. A decade after his decision, Judge Garrity continued to oversee his plan to desegregate the city schools.
Desegregation is not an event. It's a process. There's work that remains to be done. And the challenges of the future, I do believe, are greater than the challenges of the past.
In 1960, 90% of Boston was white. Today, it's about 50%. But now, only 13% of Boston's public school students are white.
Oh, he got the problem right. He got the decision right. It was the remedy that he didn't get right.
Boston historian Jim Vrabel says Judge Garrity moved too fast and should have taken more time to address the deeper problems of class, social, and educational.
In attempting to redress the historical wrong of segregation, the court ignored how people live their lives, ignored important institutions like neighborhood schools, like a parent's right to send their child to the school of their choice. His plan was a failure of public policy. For the last 40 years, we've been pursuing a mathematical solution to desegregate the Boston public schools instead of an educational solution to improve them.
15 years ago, the Boston School Committee ended the use of race as a factor in assigning students to schools. 2 months later, Judge W. Arthur Garrity died at home in Wellesley. He was 79. At his death, then-Boston Mayor Tom Eneno said, whether you agreed or disagreed with his opinion a generation ago, everyone can agree that Judge Garrity's influence on our city will be felt for a long time to come. Today, 40 years after Judge Garrity's Boston desegregation decision, we can still say the same thing. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Bruce Gellerman.